So last episode, we finished with you getting your leg over, Anna.
Oh yes, not something that happens much in my life. Joking. Getting a leg over a bike. Yes, a bike. Yeah, we're going to put a poster, photo up of me getting off with the bike, getting my leg over the bike. Oh God. You can see how this podcast is going to go already, can't you? Sugar.
We got loads of really good feedback actually about the Body Magic one.
We did loads of great responses, so we're glad you enjoyed a bit of us talking about our body magic and what we do and what we don't do and how we factor it in.
I've been away and done a bit of research actually. I've been thinking,
why doesn't that surprise me?
I was thinking I do need another trip because you kind of said this,
yeah,
you know, remembering, and I put the photos on our Instagram page, yeah, of like that moment when I abseiled across the Great Wall of China. And it kind of made me think, yeah, I do want another trip like that. So I've potentially got one up my sleeve.
Well, when I spoke to you about it, I went home and researched them as well.
Did you?
I was looking at one in Namibia. Yeah, loads of random stuff. And then I realised I've got a small child. I probably can't do it next year. But I'm going to look for the year she goes to school to go and do something epic.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, ride a bike in Namibia. Can you imagine? If I cycled around Namibia.
No, that's what I mean. That, yeah, but that's the stuff,
yeah,
that
but
you're
it's a challenge. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So what are you thinking?
Well, I've been looking at this tiny little country called Bhutan.
Oh.
And it's in Asia.
Right.
And it's pretty much in between China and India.
Oh, how beautiful.
And it's on the Himalayan mountains. And there are these monasteries that you have to like scramble up really steep hills to get to.
Wow.
But yeah, there's only 800,000 people that live in the whole country.
And oh my God.
I found some trips which do it organised.
Yeah, and I was going to say, that's not something you just want to go with a map and hope for the best, is
exactly,
it?
Yeah. But the humidity would be really difficult. And also altitude as well. And I'm a really sicky person.
Yes, so am I.
So I think, but the way you kind of overcome the altitude and the heights, I think would scare me a little bit. It's just from, it gives me a reason to do
training.
This training.
Mm.
So then I've got a reason to do the training rather than doing it for the sake of it.
Ah, just doing it for the good of your mind and your, yeah, body isn't enough sometimes, is it?
They're just expensive, these things. Yeah. So then I've got to factor in how on earth am I going to afford that? But hey, you have to put the pin on the donkey and then you work out how you're going to get to that pin. Or the tail, or that's the worst anatomy. Oh, anatomy, analogy.
Oh, jeepers creepers. Now I sound like my mum.
So anyway, so if you've got a big challenge that you're doing this year, then let us know. The ways for you to get in contact with us, you can reach us on Instagram, which many of you have been doing actually, at Slimming World Podcast. And our email address is slimmingworldpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe,
yes,
to this.
Please do, so that it will drop in on your inbox to tell you that your podcast is there on a Monday morning. It's lovely when you get that little ping that, yeah, tells you can have a listen.
Exactly. Whatever, you know, follow us on Spotify. And we're finding actually quite a few are leaving some reviews and ratings for us, which is really nice because we don't know so many of you.
No.
And that's, we're discovering parts of the UK that we never knew existed.
We've got to give a little shout out to our team of people in West Sussex, is,
yeah,
it? We love this, considering that Claire and I really didn't work out where West Sussex was. It's really lovely that there's a little gang of you that are listening down there. So if there are any little hubs of listeners, let us know, because we'd love to work out where you are on the map.
And here we are, sat in my kitchen recording this podcast with the poinsettia.
Poinsettia?
Poinsettia?
Oh, yeah, poinsettia?
Poinsettia?
No, poinsettia. I think the red flowers
still,
for Christmas.
Living,
isn't,
yeah,
it?
We've got that. Yeah,
grey Manchester. Yeah, it's really inspiring, the view we've got.
My washing is, yeah, nearby as well. But who'd have thought? You're probably hopefully listening in a more glamorous surrounding. I don't know. In my head, West Sussex sounds like it's like a really posh, rich place.
It is,
with mansions and celebrities and stuff,
and like sea and like bistros. And scallops. Tell us if we've got it right.
So here's what we're going to do over the next few weeks. We'll obviously keep releasing our episodes on Mondays, but we've also got a couple of juicy bonus episodes as well, where we have pulled together some of your questions as listeners. So we'll be releasing an extra episode later this week to make sure that we pick up some of those comments that you've been sending us. But the topic for today has actually been suggested by one of you, and both of us jumped out at this email, which was titled Emotional Eating. It was sent by Vicky in Nottingham, and both of us said, oh yeah.
Totally get that, don't we?
So this is what Vicky's email says. It says, hey, I love the podcast. Look forward to it every week. I'm doing Slimmerworld online. I'm almost at my first stone loss after 5 weeks, which is incredible to do that online at home on your own. Having fluctuated from week to week due to poor choices. I wouldn't say that a stone loss is poor choices. You're doing something right there.
I think you've made some great choices in there, sweets.
Also, when I read that, I didn't read fluctuated when I first saw that. Flatulated is what I first read. Anyway, we get to the hub of this.
Sorry, Vicky.
I am an emotional eater. I know I am, and I really struggle to control it. I have had quite a few major issues, and in my head, food has always made me feel better, although it is always just short term. I know this is an issue for me. I really struggle to control it. What is your advice for strategies to do this? Powerful email, and well done for putting pen to paper or finger to phone.
But well done for,
you said it.
Yeah,
for openly admitting that.
I think that's a really good call, and trusting us to give you some advice. So hopefully this will help you a little bit.
Yep.
I was an massive emotional secret binge eating obsessed woman. I like to think I've overcome that now. It's taken me a long time, but I can totally empathise where you are at, Vicky. And I know it's something I've had to work so hard on doing. And still now it does come back and rear its ugly head at some point. It really, really does. Claire, have you had similar experience?
Yeah. And in actual fact, when I received this email, the notification came up on my phone. I'd just come off the night before a big crash. And it was my first big emotional crash in a long time.
Was that your popcorn night?
It wasn't the popcorn night.
I
was away, working away in a hotel. It was cold. It was snowy. I was feeling a bit sorry for myself. I was tired. And I crashed. In fact, I'll go find my diary and I'll read what I wrote in my post that night, because it was a real, I'm here again.
Yes.
Why am I doing this? Once again.
And that's the thing, isn't it? And I think what we're going to look at is there's the actually why it happens, what happens when you're doing it, but then that aftermath, why am I here again? I thought I was fixed. And it almost brings up so much fear and anxiety that you have, that you're not sorted, and it does come back. So I think it's recognising you're not alone with emotional eating. Mm. It's a way we're taught. I don't know if it happened to you, Claire, as a child, but for me, it was something, food was used in so many ways by my family, by my wider friends and all of that, that we learned a behaviour. So my parents ran their own business. They worked 7 days a week. They were exhausted. We get picked up from school and we had a 7-Eleven opposite the shop. And we go to 7-Eleven and Dad would say, I'm really stressed. Will you get me a donut? So we learned that when Dad was stressed, he wanted a donut and we'd get a donut too. So, you know, by the age of 13, I was 13 stone, because I had learned that if something bad happens, I ate food. Mm. My dad, God rest his soul as well, used to be a secret eater. So he would, if we weren't with Mum, he'd say, come on, we're going to get some chips from the chippy, but don't tell your Mum. So we go, we would have eaten this massive portion of chips, get home, Mum would have made dinner, and we would have been too full to eat it, but we had to lie to Mum and pretend that we weren't full from the chips that Dad had got us to eat, because he was stressed. So I learned very early on, if you had a problem, food would help you to kind of sort that problem out. And the higher in sugar it was and the higher in fat it was, the better. But also that people didn't accept that, so it was okay to hide it. And you don't realise until you look back, you know, at 38 now, I realise how that happened and how what Dad was going on through in his mind manifested in our lives. But it does take a long time to unpick, doesn't it?
That's really interesting.
So interesting. And my mum, love her. Mum is not a foodie. Like, mum eats because she has to stay alive, but she doesn't get excited by food. She doesn't get excited by the taste and, you know, the feeling. So she could never kind of empathize with Dad about why he did that kind of binging. And Dad was a diabetic, so he knew full on what he was doing. So it was like Mum would eat to sustain us, and Dad would like give us that emotional fulfillment from food. I also come from Dad's side's a big Jewish family. And much like Irish families, big Spanish families, it's all about the food, isn't it? And it's all about the, oh, you know, come on, eat as a family. And my grandma, God rest her soul, she would literally be filling you with food as she was telling you how big your bum was. Do you know what I mean? That emotional, like, you're not great at how you look, you know, you're not good enough, but I'm going to feed you.
Yeah.
And then she also had the sweetie drawer. Did anybody's grandparents have anything like this? The sweetie drawer. You knew on a Friday night, you went to the sweetie drawer. It was a drawer about this big, Claire. About 60 centimetres. It had every chocolate bar you could imagine. It had every sweet. It had everything. And you were allowed to go in it after you'd eaten this gargantuan meal of about 47 courses to go and get your chocolate. But you had to eat it then and there in front of everyone. You couldn't, like, wait. So it was really interesting how you'd be told at the dinner table you're overweight, but then given the chocolate afterwards.
It's all these mixed messages.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And what impact that has. It's only when I went to university, I think, when you step out of your family bubble, and a lot of the time, I think, you know, people are just doing what they need to. Both my mom and dad worked. And there wasn't that kind of, my mom wasn't in the situation where she could stay and feed us lovely meals and stay at home and look after us. They had to work, and that's completely acceptable. But when you go to university and you live with other people and you see what they might be doing and what they're cooking, that for me really opened my eyes. And I've since lived in a lot of different houses, flat sharing and house sharing with so many different people. And I kind of look at it with curiosity, really, own cooking habits and how they do things. And what have they got in their cupboards and stuff? I find that quite interesting.
Do you think since you left home and you went to uni and discovered food for yourself, do you think the emotional eating got worse because there was lots of different food to eat?
Yeah, but a lot of it comes down to education. And I think that if you are in a situation, perhaps when you are growing up where, I don't know, you cook as a family and you learn how to do things from scratch, maybe you get those messages quite soon. For me, I didn't really even like cooking at school.
Didn't
when
you?
We had to take a we make a cake
did
or something
in school.
Couldn't be bothered. I was just like, oh, what a load of rubbish. Eating was just something that I just had to do occasionally. I didn't really understand that it fueled me, it made me healthy, gave me energy and strength, and it was just something that you did.
You see, I was obsessed by cooking and food from a very young age. I used to be the naked chef at like 4. There's pictures. Yeah, still like to do it now, if I'm honest. But yeah, cooking was something I was obsessed by because my dad was so passionate about it. My mum, it was never something she was that brilliant at. Love you, mum. You're brilliant at so many other things. So cooking was something I did for the whole family. By the age of 12, I'd be cooking for the whole family. So I kind of was in control. I'd be deep frying, you know, like chicken for them and all sorts of things. So I learned that I could make people happy with food as well, which is a really interesting thing when someone's sad. Oh, I've cooked this for you. I've bought you a bar of chocolate and all of those things. So for me, it's really deeply seated from when I was young. So for Vicky out there, I think it's about exploring about why it happens, where it comes from. Because the moment I could acknowledge it came from when I was little, it came from how my parents, God bless them, dealt with, you know, when we were sad or when we were happy. Because we'd go out for meals when we were like, something had gone right. We went to this one restaurant that had Lindt chocolate bunnies. They used to have a wall of them. And we'd go to this restaurant 2 or 3 times a week, like my parents loved to eat out. And after every meal, we'd get a box of these Lindt chocolate bunnies. There were 16 in each box. And I would eat that at least 3 times a week. So you can see how these little things set in. So Vicky, or to anyone out there as an emotional eater, I think it's really important you investigate where it begins. Because I think, do you think that gives you kind of a sense of strength? I know it did with me.
Yeah, and being at peace with that.
Yeah,
I didn't learn how to cook things when I was younger, but I know that my mom and dad did the best they could with what they had, and I'm at peace with that. But then when I entered into the adult world, it was my responsibility and my choices that caused me to put on weight. I had a choice then to look after myself, but I didn't know. Now I'm kind of just... being at peace with that and thinking, right, now I'm going to learn a different way and not being so hard on myself.
Yes. Another thing that helps me with emotional eating is learning a habit. So for me, what I recognise is if I'm cross, I will literally, it's not so bad now, but I would be chocolate and I would eat the chocolate before I'd even recognised I was cross. So what I had to really, really do is keep a food diary to look at the emotion and the food that went with it. Because I found that when I was in a really good space, happy, energized, feeling in control, I would eat totally different things to when I was angry or sad. But I had to physically see that in black and white to recognize it, because it happens so fast, doesn't it?
I agree. In fact, you keep on rambling. I'll go get my diary and I'll show you.
Oh my God, she's leaving me alone in control, guys. I could come out with anything. Another thing that I also recognised is about how I felt about the food. So when I was triggered by like a food, what I found out was that it was because I had a really positive view of the food. And I was talking to my group about this the other day about chocolate. Chocolate can make you feel fantastic. The view we have of chocolate is that it's warm, it's luxurious, it's creamy, it's satisfying, it's sweet. Really, really positive connotations. And I think when you keep thinking about the positive connotation of the food that could trigger you, it makes you want to eat it even more. So it's really important to recognize, if you are an emotional eater, what foods you are emotionally eating. She's come back in the room. I felt a bit like... you know when...
I'm so glad you behaved.
You know when you're in the car when you're little and your mum and dad leave you and you're like, yeah, I've got the steering wheel, I could drive off. I felt a little bit like that. So glad she's come back.
Am I the responsible one?
You are. This? Yeah, you're like...
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never been described
oh,
as
no,
responsible.
No, you're the responsible one out of both of us. Just because I've got a kid doesn't mean I'm responsible.
Ooh. So this... Like,
this is interesting.
This is dated like at the end of January. And so I was working in Cardiff. I was there for a whole week in a really lovely hotel, and I'd been getting up at like 4:30 in the morning, so I'd been on early shifts. I'd still done my walking. In the canteen, they had a Slim and Will quiche, which was amazing. I was so excited by that. And then I came home in the evening. I was tired. I felt a bit lonely. I just felt cold and everything. And so I ordered room service. I was like, and after I'd eaten it, I sat there and I felt sick. And I felt really crap.
Yeah.
And I totted up the sins and I was like, I've easily had about 75 sins in that meal. Why did I do that? And so I did a little mind map. So I wrote, why did I do that?
And oh my gosh, you really did.
Yeah, you're actually seeing my thoughts here.
Is this something you do a lot?
I do, because I think you've got to create a bit of distance of, you know, ideally you do this before you order the food and before you eat it, right?
Midway through a sticky toffee pudding. Yeah. You can actually see sticky toffee pudding. No, you can't.
And so I wrote down here, you know, why'd I do it? Well, there's no washing up. I love eating in bed.
Do you?
I love a treat. I love room service. It feels luxurious.
Doesn't it?
Posh.
Oh, I love it.
Robe. I deserve it. It's escape, avoiding overwhelm. Then I put here, I get a buzz from it. I numb out. No control. Can't stop. I'm addicted. I have to have it. I'm tired. I'm lazy. I'm not paying. Got to get my money's worth.
Yes.
I love sweet treats. It was cold. I wanted warm food. Am I stuffing myself to distract myself from what the real issue is? Is eventually, as you know, you just let your mind
hit the nail on the head
wander.
There, isn't it?
And so eventually you kind of start to see this written down in black and white, and it made me just kind of think, okay, there's something far deeper here.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said before on this podcast how I've taken out having McDonald's and Domino's and takeaways, right? I've stopped drinking. But the thing that I cannot not do
is eat. Yeah, yes.
Is eat. I can't not eat, okay? So there's still ways where I had to eat that evening, but I just hadn't given myself the best options.
Right.
Um, But one of the things that night, I kind of jumped on to, I'm part of like an online group coaching session, which I get through Support with 1 Year No Beer. Oh, wow. And there was a lady who came on. She has a book called The Kindness Method.
I've heard about this.
Sharu Izadi. I'll put the link in, in the bio to this. And she's English, and she is an addiction specialist, not particularly always with drugs and alcohol.
But food.
But she's lost 8 stone, I want to say, and has really struggled with food. Yeah. Food was her thing. So she talks about this kindness method and behavioural change. And one of the things that came up again, I mean, her talk, that particular, me to hook up to that on that night was so like...
That was like the stars aligned, didn't it?
But one of the things she talks about again, and I keep hearing this, is about this surfing the urge. And
right, you were talking about this, never heard of it.
You've never heard this.
I thought it was something rude.
And as soon as I saw Vicky's email, I thought, we've got to talk about this. So surfing the urge is just one of these ways, which is like a form of meditation and thinking through things to help with cravings and unhelpful urges, right? So urge surfing, you think of it like you, like fighting a craving is like you're trying to fight waves in the ocean.
Yeah.
And it's smarter to like kind of surf them rather than go against them, right? And try and fight them. So you kind of watch these urges and they kind of rise and fall like waves, but you don't have to respond to them. And most people have urges, but eventually they pass just like the tides pass. So they normally peak around 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you can ride out that wave, then it passes. And so, the idea is like creating a bit of space and you're focusing on your breath, all the meditation techniques that we're told
bit
to do.
Distraction.
And most of us are like, yeah, yeah, we'll get on to it.
Get the chocolate out,
You've got to notice your thoughts, but you've got to not judge them. And you also have to... almost think about, well, where am I feeling this urge? Like when I feel quite deeply upset or emotional, I feel it in my throat. My throat feels like it's closed, like
how
I can't talk.
I feel it around my eyes. Is that interesting?
And maybe, I don't know, you want to close your eyes so you don't have to look at it or
it
or something.
Oh, I feel like this heaviness here. Isn't it interesting?
So that they've kind of really noticing the different places that you feel. It might be that you feel the tension in your shoulders.
You don't know about that, Claire, do you?
Does it feel hot or cold? You know, are you tight or are you relaxed? And then you have to kind of give that urge like a number between 1 and 10, like how intense is this right now, and then kind of carry on, do your thing, keep coming back to it and saying, okay, is it still a 10 or maybe now it's a 6? And so and then they have, when you go onto YouTube, I mean, there's a whole
there's a video for everything, isn't there?
There really is, so many different meditations, but surfing the urge or urge surfing is actually a thing, and these guys talk about it quite often because there's like the rule of three, isn't there? If you can say no to something three times, then by the time you get to the third time, you're like, oh, I can't be bothered. Like, people I know have used that for smoking. Well, you still want a cigarette after the third
time. Well, that's the thing. The big thing that really helped me with emotional eating was hypnosis, because I'm really into hypnosis with that. I gave up smoking through it. I've also lost weight because of it. And what that really looks at is that kind of urge situation and being present in that urge situation and that craving, and actually acknowledging the emotion that you're feeling that's causing that. And that's really allowed me to ascertain, especially since I've had the baby and been at home, eating because I'm bored, eating because it's something fun to do, you know. It's quite nice when you've been stuck at home for 12 hours and the only company you've got is a baby that's crying and puking on you. Stopping for like 6 chocolate digestives is quite a nice thing, but acknowledging that actually I'm bored, I'm stressed, I need to go out for a walk or call a friend or go and see someone, the hypnosis allowed me to understand those urges. So that could be a really helpful thing, is like either looking at like a mindfulness, a meditation, a hypnosis to understand yourself a little bit. But you said something earlier that really struck a chord with me, forgiving yourself, because I think what we do is really beat ourselves up, don't we? So I encounter it a lot in my groups where people feel really bad that they've given in, they've submitted, they've not had the willpower, they've not had the strength to say no. it's knowing that it's okay if you do sit in a hotel room and eat sticky toffee pudding. Mm. It's okay if you've eaten a family size bag of Maltesers, but learning from that so you can get a strategy in place for when it happens again, I think. But guilt just makes you go and eat it again, doesn't it?
Yeah. One of the things in the notes that I took from that session with Charu was accepting that at some point this type of behaviour has actually given you pleasure.
Yeah.
And it has played a profound role in your life. You know, it might be that you were going through a really difficult time and this thing at that particular time
got you through something,
but now it's no longer serving you, right? So kind of accepting that it's not really the enemy. At one point or maybe a few points in your life, this was actually a friend.
A really
good
friend.
And it helped
you
through some good times. So kind of just saying, thanks for that. You really helped me.
Wow.
Now I need to go and find a different way. I thought that was really interesting. But also how when we go to work, we have reviews, monthly appraisals, those kind of things. We have targets and we're held accountable for those things. But often when we come to our personal lives, we don't have someone kind of saying, okay, well, that's not really worked for you, or you're not really on track with this at the moment. What are you going to do to get there? Mm. And what kind of training do you think you might need to get to that target? And a lot of it is down to us and inside us, so we can kind of, there's a lot more room for us to kid ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter.
No, exactly. Yeah. But it's, you know, the things that I put here is what am I getting from this old habit? What did it help me do? We don't get better at eating, spending, drinking, whatever it is. So at what point do we have to kind of stop and say, I don't need to lean on this crutch anymore? And then the most important thing in terms of like a takeaway that I got from that was to create a delay.
Yes.
And
like
to see what effect that has. So I think this does come back from the surf and the urge thing as well, where, okay, I feel like this, but why am I feeling like this? And sometimes there isn't always that option when you've just done a 12-hour shift or I've been up at like 4:30 in the morning and I need something to eat right now and I want to go to bed. So it's almost like the day before I should be thinking these things.
Well, yeah, and do you know, in your pack, and if you're online, you should have access to this online, is the Be Delighted With Your First 6 Week book, I've if you remember. Yeah, and do you know what? This is a really kind of great way to review your habits, but also a way to plan ahead. Because I think the key that I've had in my own weight loss journey and how I watch my members is that forward thinking, going, right, okay, on a Saturday night, I know I likely to want X, Y, and Z or feel X, Y, and Z. What's my strategy? What's my plan? And I think if you can forward think, you don't get hit like a ton of bricks with it. It's when you suddenly go, oh no, I'm all right. It's fine. You know, I'm going to be in a stressful situation at work, but I'll have an apple and a bit of melon and a cup of tea. Is that really going to cut the mustard, actually, or do you need another strategy to plan it? So really thinking at least a day ahead, if not a couple of days ahead, of like you would plan your meals for the week, plan your emotional situations that you know you could encounter, so you've got like a bank of knowledge so that you can go and kind of attack it with it. And also not thinking you're fixed and it's always going to go away, because that was a big thing I had to deal with, was that it would always be there, but I could control it.
That's, you know, what struck me when you said that sentence was you used past tense. And for the thing that I struggle with right now, a bit like Vicky, is I feel like this is something I've got to live with for the rest of my life.
Yeah, 100%.
And that I'm not quite there in saying that I'm on top of it. Yeah.
But that's okay.
I've still got quite a lot of power over me.
Yeah, 100%. It's taken me 19 years to get to this point, Claire. Do you see what I mean? It's
but you're
a
only
process.
21.
I know. What are you talking about, 19? But it's taken me a long time of learning, of watching other people. I'm in a really privileged position. I look after hundreds and hundreds of people a week. So maybe I get a massive injection of it and have learned in a different way. But it's knowing it does have power over you, the power comes from within you. Does that make sense? I read an amazing book called Stop Thinking, Start Living by Dr. Richard Carlson. I'd recommend anyone reads this who struggles with emotional eating. And it's the power of the thought, and how sometimes we think that thoughts are not our own. They're kind of from something else. Hmm. The moment you recognize it's your thinking, it's your habit, it gives you the control to change it. So knowing that you don't have to be perfect, do you? But making steps each week or each day forward so that, you know, next time you're in a cold hotel room, that you won't necessarily go and order all the room service and then feel bad about it. You might plan in, like you're going to do this week, plan in something lovely so you don't feel restricted, but not berate yourself if it does go a bit wonky.
Yeah. It's an ongoing process. And actually, we're both openly saying as part of this series that we are still members and still ongoing in our journey. So,
well, look what happened to me this morning. Sorry, Phil, I'm going to out you. I had a row with my husband on the way to this recording. I ended up in Tesco going to buy some melon to have a really healthy breakfast. And I was at the till and I was like, I want chocolate. I'm so cross. I want chocolate. And I literally stood at this till for about 4 minutes and thought, no, I'm not going to have chocolate. I had the mango in my hand, the banana, the Diet Coke. And I came away with a little like protein bar thing, which actually was only seven sins. But it stopped me from going and hitting, I don't know, a Bounty or a whole family bag of Maltesers, because I had to stand in that aisle at Tesco. The poor woman in that petrol station was like, do you want serving? I was like, I'm having a moment. But
you would have arrived here with like chocolate all over your face.
Exactly.
Because I've not had chocolate.
Yeah. What are you talking about? But know that it will strike you, but it's knowing sometimes that you won't give in to that, or you may make a choice that isn't necessarily 100% food optimized in the free food sense, but is a better choice that won't trigger you. Be kind to yourself, I guess, is what I'm saying. And just don't row with your husband is probably another one too.
That's, you know what, that's interesting, because Friday night I was just absolutely shattered and I hadn't had any of my sins all day, and I went and got one of those Halo ice cream tubs and I ate the whole tub.
Yeah, but that's
with strawberries
what,
and raspberries, but it's protein,
nice.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and only about 18 sins,
17
isn't it?
And a half.
Oh.
And I nailed that whole tub, and did it make me feel like I'd had a massive treat? Yes, it did.
Well, you had, but only 17 sins.
I'll take that. It's looking for those wins, isn't it? But planning ahead and reading some stuff to take ourselves out of our own head.
Yeah.
Look at the science behind this, look at the reasons behind, the theory behind what we're doing, and think about the strategies.
Journaling as well really helps, because then you can look back and go, okay, this is how I felt, this is what I'm going to do. And also talk to people, because I think, Vicky, what your email brought up is that it's so common, and it is a thing that so many of us battle with on a daily basis.
100%. Yes. Okay. Well, if you've enjoyed this podcast, come say hello on our Instagram at Slimming World Podcast. We'll try and put a few motivational posts every few days as well.
Motivational posts?
Motivational. It's really hard to spell correctly when you're typing fast.
Listen, I'm dyslexic, so don't even talk about the spelling mistakes I make.
This is where people can tell who's doing which posts.
You'll know if the posts are beautifully written with amazing punctuation and I haven't dropped a swear word in by accident, that it's Claire. Everything else is from me.
Next time, make sure you hit subscribe so you pick up every new episode. Next Monday, we'll be talking about your why and getting to the heart of it. But later this week, we will be dropping a Brucey bonus episode.
I wondered what she was going to say then. Brucey bonus.
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 Yeah. Of some of your questions as well that we're going to acknowledge and power through. So have a good start to the week. Rock on. Stay strong.
Keep food optimizing.
And do you want the last word, Anna?
No, I'm okay.
Go on, just say any word.
Any word? Oh no, because my favourite word's a swear word, so I won't say that. But just keep the faith.
Okay, good work.